Contact Marilyn at 262-654-6840 to get more details. Again, that's in Kenosha at Kemper Hall, a hootenanny, 7 to 10 o'clock this Friday in Ambrose Hall. WRJN.com, that's our webpage. We keep our newscast in the local news section. At WRJN News, get you our Twitter updates. I'm Tom Carco, WRJN News.
That sounds like a hoot, that hootenanny.
Could be fun.
You gonna go?
No.
Maybe we should send our roving reporter, Mark Eichhorst, for a hard-hitting report on the hootenanny. What do you think?
He'd probably have a good time, if nothing else.
He needs a good time once in a while.
Yep.
Needs to get out more.
Yep.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
There he goes, the great Tom Carco. This is Glenn Klein in for Mike Clemens. It's 15 minutes after 7 o'clock. He is the founding attorney of the Cabranes Law Offices in Racine and the host of the Cabranes Law Hour here on WRJN, heard Fridays from 1 until 2 o'clock. But he's made a special appearance per my request. Please welcome to your radio friend, Attorney John Cabranes. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
I have no complaints, but thank you for caring enough to ask.
Well,
because I know you're a very caring attorney.
I am a very caring individual.
I've asked Attorney Cabranes to come in because not only do I just love seeing him because he's such a handsome man, but also he's got expertise specifically in the area that is the major controversy right now with President Trump having fired Acting Attorney General Sally Yates yesterday, what they're calling the Monday Night Massacre. We will get Attorney Cabranes' take after WRJN does weather, sports, and Charles Osgood's file. Keep it right here.
WRJN AccuWeather forecast. Considerable cloudiness for today with a snow shower around. Will be breezy with a high of 36. Patchy cloud.
In the context of more frequent meals during the waking hours, not so close to bedtime, and earlier in the day, that would be the ideal.
And that should start with a healthy breakfast.
If you don't kind of ritualize something, it's really easy for it to fall away.
The Osgood File. I'll see you online at Facebook, Twitter, and at theosgoodfile.com. This is Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
And this is Glenn Klein for Mike Clemens on Magnum.media's WRJN. It is 23 minutes after 7 o'clock on your Tuesday morning, and he is the founding attorney of the Cabranes Law Offices in Racine. Please welcome to the WRJN microphones, Attorney John Cabranes. Good morning again, Attorney Cabranes.
Good morning, Clint. I notice that I'm missing the wild applause. Don't you have a sound effect for that?
We must, but here's a sound effect that I do have available handy. It's well, I'll just play it for you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Attorney John Cabranes. Crickets.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling the love.
I am lovable, you know.
So they say.
Yes, I absolutely believe that. So, Attorney Cabranes, of course, hosts the Cabranes Law Hour here on Fridays from 1 until 2 o'clock. I get to sit in and spin the dials, and it's just a really compelling show about the law. And I asked Attorney Cabranes to come in because now we are the day after what they're calling the Monday Night Massacre, where President Trump fired Acting Attorney General Sally Yates because she would not follow his executive order to keep out these refugees or just people coming into the country from these seven predominantly Muslim countries.
Yeah, well, it was a little more than that. She actually showed them up. And, you know, firing, if she had worked for me, she would have been fired too. I mean, I don't think no boss would put up with what she did.
Do you think that President Trump called her up and said, Acting Attorney Yates, you're fired? You think sort of like that?
No, I think probably one of his minions did the firing.
This is reminiscent, or at least a lot of people in the media, and of course Trump's opponents on the left, are comparing this to the Saturday Night Massacre when President Nixon at the time ordered the firing of Special Prosecutor Archibald Cox. And here is the report that Tom Brokaw did for this. This was in October of 1973.
Good evening. There are reports tonight that President Nixon has ordered Attorney General Elliot Richardson to fire the special Watergate prosecutor Archibald Cox. Cox opposes President Nixon's plan to release summaries of the presidential tapes in the Watergate case. Cox said at a news conference today he'll continue his court efforts to get the tapes, despite the president's orders that he give up that court fight. Richardson's office said the attorney general did not agree with the president's order to Cox to stay out of the courts, but White House sources say Richardson did agree. In any event, Richardson tonight is said to be considering his next move.
And his next move, Attorney General Elliot Richardson at the time, was to resign, which he did. And then the Deputy Attorney General, William Ruckelshaus, he resigned. And so guess who got to fire Archibald Cox?
Who got to fire Archibald Cox?
Solicitor Robert Bork, who would later be turned down for the Supreme Court.
Who later became a verb.
To be borked. Exactly right. And, of course, ironically and coincidentally, tonight President Trump will be making his nomination to fill the vacancy of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, the deceased conservative. So all these things, I mean, it's incredible, the intensity of it. What are the comparisons, or are the comparisons to Nixon ordering the firing of Archibald Cox to what President Trump has done with Sally Yates? How accurate are the comparisons?
They're not accurate at all.
Wow.
Nixon in, 74, 73, I think it was under investigation for the Watergate. And what he was doing in trying to get rid of Archibald Cox was to obstruct that investigation. That's what he was doing. He knew that they were onto him. He knew that that there were problems. He knew that there was danger. And what he figured he was going to do is he was going to use his executive power to protect himself. Fast forward, almost 50 years now. What you have is a situation where there is a executive order that is issued. No court has determined at this point that it's unconstitutional. The chief executive of this country has significant power in determining who comes into this country and who doesn't. And this woman takes it upon herself to say it's unconstitutional. And not only does she say it's unconstitutional, but then instructs her underlings not to defend this law.
Aren't you supposed to, as an attorney general or as an attorney of any kind, even if you disagree with a legal ruling or a law, you're supposed to actually uphold it?
It's your job. It is your job to argue on behalf of the United States, before the courts the United States is your client, and so it would be like me saying to a client after they've paid me, after I've been working on the case, I disagree with your position, I'm out of here. Not even that, because she didn't have the courtesy of doing that. I disagree with your position. This is what I'm going to do, and dictating to your client how to proceed. You know, the honorable thing to do for her would have been to resign. Just say, you know what, I disagree. And in that comparison, if she had done that, then you'd have a closer comparison, I think, to the Saturday Night Massacre, where basically the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General basically said, "Hey, look, I'm uncomfortable with this. I don't believe it's an ethical order. It may be a legal order, but I'm not comfortable with it, and therefore, please accept my resignation." She could have done that. But that's not what she did. She wanted to show him up. She was grandstanding, and he did absolutely the right thing in getting rid of her.
He is Attorney John Cabranes of the Cabranes Law Offices in Racine, and the Cabranes Law Hour, heard here at Fridays from 1 until 2. We are going to continue with Attorney Cabranes after WRJN covers the nation, the great state of Wisconsin, the next potentially award-winning newscast of the great Tom Carco on deck.
Sometimes you just need a little help. Trusted caregivers from Society's Assets have been helping seniors or folks with disabilities.
Webpage, we keep our newscast in the local news section. At WRJN News, we'll get you our Twitter updates. I'm Tom Carco, WRJN News.
Obviously, the whole issue of immigration and undocumented workers, and the executive order by President Trump is really at the forefront of the news today and will be for some time. And Mayor John Dickert of Racine, good Democrat, refers to people that are here illegally as undocumented workers. And in a clip that you had, TK, Mayor Dickert said that there is no law that says that they have to or should arrest undocumented workers. Attorney John Cabranes is here, who is an immigration attorney. Can you play that clip again from Mayor Dickert? And I want to hear Attorney Cabranes' comments on that, please.
Sure.
You cannot take out undocumented workers for no reason, and you cannot risk our funding, federal funding, because of our actions under the law. So we are challenging those comments and the executive order to state that cities have rights under the 10th and 14th Amendments, and we're going to abide by those rights.
All right. So Attorney John Cabranes, who's an immigration attorney here in Racine, is Mayor Dickert, the mayor of Racine, accurate in his comments?
No, he's not. The 10th and 14th, the 10th Amendment is the Commerce Clause, which basically says that all rights not specifically given to the federal government are given to the states. The 14th Amendment applies the amendments to the Constitution, applies the Bill of Rights essentially to the states. So the what essentially the mayor is saying is that the federal government doesn't have a say so in what cities and states do, and that's not true. And the reason it's not true is because there is a supremacy clause in the Constitution, which essentially says federal rules, federal regulations, federal laws, as long as they comply with the Constitution, as long as there's an interest, federal interest there. The federal laws trump state laws, and no pun intended there. So when Mayor Dickert says that cities and states have rights, that communities have rights, they do, but they're very limited rights. And when they come into conflict with established federal law is going to win every single time. You have to challenge it on the basis of that there is no federal interest in a 10th Amendment Commerce Clause. And that's been done from time to time. There was a famous gun case out in Texas where the feds basically put in made a law that it was illegal to have a firearm within, I think, 1,000 feet of a school. And that was challenged based on the fact that there was no relation between that law and interstate commerce, which is why they call the 10th Amendment the Commerce Clause. So there has to be some relation, federal interest in interstate commerce. And when you're talking about immigration law and all of the issues surrounding immigration law, you're going to find that they can make a pretty good argument that, first of all, that it does impact commerce, but secondly and most importantly, it runs right into the Supremacy Clause, which said essentially when laws come into conflict, federal laws reign supreme.
So these sanctuary cities, which I don't think we're seeing as a sanctuary city, but Mayor Dickert is saying that he does not have to, if the federal government would say you have to arrest and cooperate with ICE in deporting undocumented workers. If you're a sanctuary city and illegal immigrants are rushing to places like Chicago and New York and San Francisco, and the federal government is threatening to withhold certain federal funds if they are in violation of federal law, which sanctuary cities are, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Then as an immigration attorney yourself, what would you recommend to not only the executives of those cities, but also undocumented workers who are there?
Well, let me walk that back a little bit. When I said absolutely, it's unclear whether they actually violate federal law. what a lot of sanctuary cities have done, and Madison is a sanctuary city. Okay, so let's talk about my experiences with Madison. I have a large percentage of my practice deals with undocumented individuals, and so I have a case out in Madison. It's a drug case, my guy was arrested.
Who's an undocumented person?
Who is an undocumented person? And I, the first thing I thought, because I didn't know at the time that Madison was a sanctuary city, the first thing I thought was, well, I'm not going to be able to get bond for him because I'm sure that based on the charges and the seriousness of the charges, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or also known as ICE, would have come by and put a detainer on the guy. And then I make some phone calls to try to find out if I can beat ICE to the punch and get him out of there before ICE gets to him. And I find out from the jail that, as it turns out, they don't let ICE know that they have undocumented people in the jail. So they don't cooperate. They don't give the basic information to ICE, and so ICE then can't exercise their power over them. So, is it a federal law that says that the jails have to give that information? I don't think that there's a federal law. I can't think of a federal law that would apply that would say that the jail has to give that information to anyone. They just, as a routine matter, don't provide the information, and so ICE doesn't know who's there and who's not. And so therefore it makes ICE's job that much more difficult. I will tell you this. I work with undocumented people. 99.9% of the people I work with are salt of the earth. These are people that you want as your neighbors.
They came to this country for the same reason that our ancestors came to this country. But here's the difference, as I see it, is that when they came through, for example, to Ellis Island at the end of the 19th century, there wasn't these immigration laws. The process was much different. And now they have gone through no process at all for whatever reason that they're here, whether they're salt of the earth now. Now what do we do?
Well, see, here's the thing. I mean, we have in a roundabout way invited them into this country because we provide them with employment.
And incentives to come. And they're inexpensive employees. And, of course, it's been in the United States business interest. Here's the one thing that I don't understand. I wish a Trump supporter would explain this to me. So we have undocumented workers coming into this country way before the time of Ronald Reagan, the last time they tried to legislate on the immigration issue, which failed miserably. So in both Republican and Democratic administrations, both Republican and Democratic Congresses, we have failed to secure our own border. So now let's say that President Trump decides he wants to build this wall and actually do something about security at the southern border. Please explain to me why Mexico should pay for our mistake.
Well, Mexico should pay because it's in Mexico's best interest. They're not going to pay, okay? And I'd be interested to see how you're going to squeeze the money out of them. The bottom line is that we as American taxpayers are going to find out that we're going to be treated exactly the way we're always treated. We're going to be grabbed by the ankles and have every dime that they can shake out of us fall out of our pockets. But Mexico should pay for it. And the reason that Mexico should pay for it it's only tangentially related to the fact that you have Mexican citizens, a lot of Mexican citizens, crossing into this country illegally. The problem is that Mexico is just a mess. It's a mess economically. It's a mess with the crime. And so what happens is this. There's no incentive. There is no incentive for the government to improve the economic situation of their people if their people leave the country and then send money back to Mexico. And so what happens is, you know, if you can find a way to secure the border and to have some reasonable immigration program, because I got to tell you, if you look at the visa bulletin, if I have a brother in Mexico, and I want to bring my brother in, it's going to take me over 20 years to follow that process. If I have an adult child, and I'm a U.S. citizen, and I want to petition for that person to come in, I think the visa applications that are now being approved are sometime in 93, 94, the petitions. So you're talking about over 20 years to bring your children legally into the country. So there are huge problems, and all you have to do is look at the visa bulletin to start getting a sense for why people don't want to have their family separated for 20 years, and they start coming across illegally. But the real problem is the Mexican government, because the Mexican government doesn't have to change anything. What happens in most countries around the world when the majority of the population doesn't have money, doesn't have food, doesn't have the basic means to have at least a subsistence level life? What happens is that you usually have chaos and internal disorder, and the government falls, and somebody comes in, and somebody tries to deal with that situation. Well, you know, Mexico doesn't have that problem. Why? Because all those disaffected people, the people that don't have anything to look forward to in their own country, well, you know, to the north, there's a country that, you know, you can get employment, you can make enough money so that you might be able to buy yourself a little house, you can raise a family, you can live like a normal human being, like the American dream that everybody who had an ancestor that came to this country was looking for that. And you might be able to have a little money left over that you can send back to your mother or your sisters or your family in Mexico. And then those people then contribute that money to the Mexican economy. Okay. So, you know, Mexico gains quite a bit by essentially having the status quo. And that's why Mexico should pay for the wall. Getting them to pay for the wall, well, that's a different issue.
He is Attorney John Cabranes from the Cabranes Law Offices in Racine. You can hear him every Friday from 1 until 2 o'clock right here on WRJN on the Cabranes Law Hour. He's an immigration attorney. He's also a criminal defense attorney. He deals with traffic law, family law. So give him a call. 262-638-0529 is the number at the Cabranes Law Offices. And I would need to tell you, beautiful humans, that your first consultation with the attorneys there is absolutely free. 262-638-0529. This kind of expertise can be yours if you've got any kind of traffic law issues, including OWIs, immigration, family law, and criminal defense issues. So this situation with President Trump, we're on the heels of his decision to fire Acting Attorney General Sally Yates. She told the Justice Department that we're not going to defend the executive order banning immigrants and refugees from these seven predominantly Muslim countries. Is President Trump within his constitutional rights?
Well, we'll see. A lot of it's going to depend on whether or not the courts believe that this is a religious discrimination or not. I don't know that they're going to be able to prove that, because they haven't banned Muslims from coming into the country. What they've banned is Muslims from these particular areas from coming into the country. So, you know, the president has a very broad power in determining who gets in and who doesn't get in. My gut would tell me that unless you find a very liberal, favorable judge for the groups that are now suing the president over this order, I think those lawsuits probably are not going to go very far.
It may not have been the wisest course, but, for example, constitutional attorney Jonathan Turley, who's all over television, says that you might not like this. This might not seem kind to you, but that President Trump is absolutely, via precedence, is within his constitutional rights to do what he's done. Many times throughout our history, and the Supreme Court has backed up the executive branch, have we stopped flows of immigration for national security reasons.
Yeah, and you chant the national security mantra, and there is a constitutional law, and I'm not by any means a constitutional scholar, but I have a passing acquaintance with the Constitution. In constitutional law, there's something called a disparate effect. Okay, so that you can have if you have a negative effect on some segment of the population, that certainly can raise eyebrows in terms of whether or not that's constitutional or not. But if you have a disparate effect, it doesn't automatically make it unconstitutional. You have to demonstrate that it's unreasonably broad or targeted to discriminate in some fashion.
Well, as President Trump argued, over 300,000 people came into the United States from other countries on Saturday. 109 were detained temporarily, and all of them were released. So it's going to be very interesting going forward. He's Attorney John Cabranes from the Cabranes Law Offices in Racine. Thank you for coming in specially.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Really appreciate it. And we will see you on Friday at 1 o'clock.
Not if I see you first.
Your radio friend is on AM 1400 WRJN Racine, FM 98.1 Kenosha, and FM 99.9 Racine.
At 8:01 on this Tuesday morning, WRJN covers this world.
Immigration ban fight, Supreme Court pick,